This is side two of session number 57, recorded on March 3rd, 2008. And we're talking about the tiny note chart. And thinking about what I said in side one about how the Android meme is technology extending itself, not humans, I would say that a larger ground of that is that the electric extensions of us, before the Android meme, we call them software. Now, you push software all the way, it should flip into a new hardware, which, as you know, I think cold fusion energy is, right? Mm-hmm. I see that the Android meme is extending itself, interplaying its parts and doing Baroque spirals on it. It is trying to mime the coming hardware, or at least the immortal frictionless state of cold fusion. It's trying to mime that in software terms, all right? So it couldn't wait for humans, so to speak, to finish extending. It took over and is extending itself rapidly to approximate the condition of frictionless society, which the new hardware will bring in. So that's another meaning of the chart here, where we have an image of what's coming, the hexad, but it isn't the hexadic state, it isn't a new hardware, but it's an image of the perpetual motion.
Mm-hmm.
Not perpetual motion, we'll call it frictionless energy, of the cold fusion ground that's coming in the hexadic situation, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say the chart is Connie looking back at the attempt of software to acquire cold fusion characteristics. And she's looking back across a bridge or a gap at the pentatic attempt to, and an excellent attempt and actual realization in software terms of the frictionless energies that are coming with cold fusion for our physical first nature bodies. All right?
Right.
So
in terms of the technology taking on a life of its own and technically it's not actually engineering itself, it's not bootstrapping itself into a higher level of organization through engineering itself, because I don't think we have computers or machines that are all that capable of learning in such a way that they can actually engineer themselves into a higher state of technical functioning.
Not yet, but they certainly predict that's coming.
Right. But right now what we're talking about is the fact that the interplay of these different communication mediums are having squared effects.
They are having, you're saying, squared effects.
Isn't that what you're saying? That the fact that they're all talking to each other, that there's a merging of the communication between machines is creating a complex network of effects, which is a kind of an evolution or a taking on a life of its own.
Yeah, it's approaching self-reflexivity, and that's why you have the cube level. The quarkton cube goes squared and cubed and whatever the fourth is, quartered, quadrupled.
Yeah. In what sense do you imagine that it's self-reflective or reflexive? There's a feed. I guess there's a feedback going on. And
I don't know what you call self-awareness, but it is able to provide better services to us in organizing data in each new software program.
Right.
And we would say, well, we're creating it. But it will, that's the theory of self-organization out of chaos. It's hard to define what consciousness is. That's the meaning of the anthropomorphic physical. We say we're conscious and they're not. But it's been an argument for 50 years over when do we stop having a monopoly on consciousness. So the way it's speeded up so rapidly, accelerated, that we have smartphones, smart this, smart that. It's beginning acknowledgement of the blurring of the boundaries of what we consider anthropomorphic and what isn't. So someday we're going to see that the actual taking over reflexivity is it maybe hard to determine.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it could happen anywhere along it. Because, you know, right, over the last 30 years, the computers know more about you than you do. They remember about you. Is your consciousness just memory? No, it's probably not just limited to memory, but for a lot of people, consciousness is just memory. Rudimentary consciousness is just reacting.
You've heard of the Turing?
Yeah, Alan Turing, yeah.
Yeah.
But the
he says that if you created a machine that was intelligent enough, you could create a machine that was intelligent enough to talk to you in such a way that you wouldn't actually ever be able to determine whether it was conscious or it could fool you into thinking that it was conscious, but you'd never really know for sure.
Yeah, like we don't verbally talk to our computer, but if you think of your tactile fingers, they're communicating to an instrument and it responds.
Yeah, I guess the Turing thing is that you have, let's say you're operating over a network and you're communicating to someone on the other side of the network doing some simple form of communication. And then they set up some kind of a bot that actually is able to handle that simple level of communication. You wouldn't know whether you were communicating with someone on the other end of the line or whether it was just a bot that was knew how to handle the type of communication that you were engaged in.
That may be why Alan Turing was retrieved in the early 90s. A lot of people started going back and talking about him, quoting him. He's retrieved because in the internet life, people didn't know who they were or who they were talking to, and it could have been fake identities. So that was realized. They
right.
assumed there was someone behind there, but how much do you need to know about something since somebody can be an image? Most people interact with people's images of themselves and the image you have of them.
Right.
So, yeah, we realized the Turing situation 15 years ago.
Right.
And that's why Turing was talked a lot about around that period.
Actually, here's a, well, maybe a...
The thing is that that's just responding. You can't share some food with the thing on the other end.
Right. In online gaming, and this has been going on for a while, you could be gaming with a network of people that you hooked up with. You knock on the door and say, "Hey, can I play with you guys?" And they go, "Yeah, sure, come on in." And then you buddy up or you team up with these guys and you go through all these labyrinthian chambers, and as you go through them, you know the objective is to fight your way through the all these situations. But turns out that programmers who know how to play these games really well, in some instances, have programmed characters to be able to react to the rules of the game. And so, in some cases, unless you're really savvy, you don't know whether you're actually fighting a human opponent that's operating a character, or whether you're fighting a bot that's been automated and knows how to fight you.
All right, so you're interacting with a person. It's just that the person has removed themselves after they created the bot, but they were created by the person.
Yeah.
So then it becomes, what's it matter who created it? The bot is the image you're dealing with, so you don't need consciousness on the other end. You can interact. That's talking, or that's communication. So, see, the boundaries come blurred about what it is that makes us human.
Yeah.
And then that's the questioning of the anthropomorphic physical. That's what's getting challenged here. What parts of ourselves are not embedded? Do we care that some of us is not embedded? Do we want all of us embedded or not embedded ever?
Well, one of the things I find peculiar about Second Life, as I'm beginning to learn more about it, is that there are places where people will go to party, and then people will couple up, and sometimes they'll go off into structure, you know, bedrooms that have been designed for making love. And so you could meet what appears to be an attractive woman who's well put together, and you don't know, you really don't know who's operating that thing. It could be a guy or a girl.
Yeah.
And so people are going off, and their characters are making love with each other, and they're fantasizing that they're somehow projecting themselves into the consciousness of the person who's operating the character, and in reality, they have no idea whether they're mingling with a man, a woman, or a child.
Well, it's like phone sex, and many people get off on that. So if people could get off on this, it's Dave Wirsa said all sex is masturbation. So that's a factor. The Evergreens said that when I was asking about these issues, they said, well, it depends on where you put consciousness along a spectrum, you know, human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different aspects of consciousness that use different senses. So you could get into have your avatar mingling with another avatar and have an orgasm or something. Be like masturbation. It's a new way to masturbate.
Mm-hmm.
So is that
if you're a strictly heterosexual, homophobic type man, and at some point you start wondering who the hell's operating this thing on the other end, it just could, I don't know, it just seems kind of weird to me.
Yeah, but people, as we get more into our chip body and TV body stuff, the chemical body becomes more plastic, and bisexuality probably will increase, because people can play with the ghettoized chemical body as an art form. Their real identity is not focused. Their sense of anthropomorphic physical integrity is not there anymore. It's somewhere else.
No.
So quadrophenia is what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just quadrophenia in the sexual area, in the part of oneself that you imagine revolves around your sexual organs.
Yeah.
So, okay, so the this is on the chart. In the Dobbs quadrant, what do you have? In the sexual zone, not the sex quadrant, but in the Dobbs quadrant, under anthropomorphic physical.
Oh, yeah. Horny device?
Horny device. So that's what that is.
Right.
Second city. Second life is a horny device.
Yeah. Now, is that also kind of a Zappo reference?
Oh, yeah, that's, what was it? Horny device. These devices. I mean, Zappa talked about
the L. Ron Hoover vacuum thing or something.
There's that, but in Roxy and Elsewhere, 1974 or so, it comes out. He's introducing a song, and he says, or whatever other devices get you off, something like that. Those are not the exact words, but he emphasizes devices. And I was probably thinking of that, and there might have been some other reference in Joe's Garage. Somewhere's in there. But yeah, definitely Zappa celebrated horny devices.
Right.
And
does he talk about the Bob doll or something in there in Joe's Garage?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of Zanocchini there for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have looked at the subatomic aspects of this. Now, I think I want to develop each quadrant.
Now, the subatomic, when we looked at the subatomic hadron, meson, baryon, diquark, and daemon nuclei, each one becoming progressively more less tangible,
probably.
I guess, even among, you know, among the world of that the physicists agree upon.
Yeah, the subdividing world.
Right. But then you have, up in the top section, you also have a lot of physics stuff. You got molecule, protein, electron, neutron, atom, or
right. Neuron.
Oh, wait a minute. What do you got there?
Well, I tried to have every specialist Western form of science or art or category discipline embedded in the chart.
Here, now answer me this. How come on the level where you have molecule, proton going across, electron, then you have neuron, which isn't a...
No, neutron.
Okay, well, mine's misprinted. It says neuron and then atom.
Is that ear maps?
Yeah, it should be neutron. Yeah, that would make sense. So.
Right, no, and I talked to ear map who made that, and there was other mistakes, and we went through them, but then we didn't finish. Mm-hmm. Or I told him, and he never got around to fixing them finally. But we had corrected some, but probably there's one or two still erroneous in there. And
right.
Discovered one.
Right, so that's on the sort of micro scale, and then right below that you got black hole, red giant, white dwarf, quasar, and pulsar. So you got some physics astrophysics, and then you have electromagnetism, gluon, boson, graviton, wormhole / X particle.
What you have here, and then you have Croker's categories: sacrificial TV, crash TV, disciplinary TV, surveillance TV, experimental TV.
Mm-hmm.
You have. I don't know what you call this, the mythic world or the pre-science world, elementals, goblins, fairies, humans, angels.
That feels like William Irwin Thompson to me.
Yeah, it is. And actually, you do have McLuhan. Everybody is in there. You know where McLuhan is? He's front spin, back spin, retrieval, chiasmus, melody.
Right.
Now, melody, that's under Bob. And so melody is a linear road of song or... singing narrative.
Oh, yeah.
It's visual space. Melody comes in as a concept under the visual space pre-Gutenberg and Gutenberg period. Now, what's happening here is it's under Bob because Bob is spelling on a melody on this chart, a linear phase of linear chain of phase shifts. So you'll find in every one of these lists we were just reading at the top, which is under Rye, Eloy, Two, Lofty, and Bob, they're all phases. Look at the prokaryotic cells. This is, again, from Thompson. Early life, and then an earlier life, but a little later than prokaryotic, anaerobic bacteria, then cyanobacteria, then eukaryotic cells, and then Acacia. It's the phase leading up to the cells that create the human. But then Acacia is beyond a biology. That's a phrase from the occult or from cosmic awareness. You know what I mean? That'd be like the idea of cold fusion energies.
Yeah.
Acacia. And then you have, in music, bass, guitar, drummer, organ, vocals. Or here's LaRouche. Circle, hyperbola, ellipse, parabola, cone, / torus. Right?
Yep.
And then you have here, this would be...
But see now, this is the thing that confuses me, because you described that Rai correlates with holopathic radio satellite?
Right, yeah.
Eloy is holopathic television satellite?
Right.
Does that mean that Rai corresponds with LaRouche and Eloy with McLuhan?
Yes.
Okay, so if we look at Rai as being LaRouche, then everything under that is not all LaRouche. It's a combination of the other three and plus LaRouche.
No, it is LaRouche. Remember, LaRouche is technological liberalism, if you read the Up the Orphic Ante essay, which lays out some basic principles of these charts.
Okay, so then how does LaRouche correspond with sacrificial TV?
We'll get to that. But the simple one, LaRouche is making technologies going forward, looking for new extensions, not worrying too much about the side effects, right?
Mm-hmm.
But pushing for quality, improved technologies. That's front spin.
Mm.
At the bottom right, front spin.
Yeah.
Now, LaRouche also talks about how geometry comes as a circle, not the line. So there's a circle right above front spin.
Mm-hmm.
LaRouche also likes to talk about material origins. Even though he has a Platonic approach to it, he's not inclined to the mystical. He's inclined to what he thinks is the pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a deep, embedded in matter kind of guy, and that's base.
Yeah.
Now, electromagnetism is a raw, early part of matter. That's electromagnetism, that's LaRouche. Prokaryotic cells, early phase. Elementals, early. Sacrificial TV, LaRouche asks you to make a sacrifice for his cult or for his volunteer group. I'm not judging it as a cult, but his mini army. You sacrifice yourself for the greater good. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So, operating within the TV body, he ends up just being Sacrificial TV, and he's sacrificed and goes to jail. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the level, if you, from Thompson's point of view, think of LaRouche as a negative element, or Croker thinks LaRouche is a part of paranoid American politics, a tradition of American politics, then he's a black hole. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or he's a molecule. Baudrillard said, beware the molecule. Now, the molecule is a major element in chemical science knowledge. It comes out of the chemical body tradition since the telegraph. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, molecule as a key factor in, up till recently, I guess, up till genetic engineering, key factor in pharmaceutical sciences.
Mm-hmm.
I can see Baudrillard not wanting people to be limited by the concept of the chemical body, and the molecule is a symbol of that map or paradigm. And Baudrillard is pointing out the cyber chip body, virtual reality effects, which goes beyond the molecule. So you got Baudrillard against the molecule, so that he's against LaRouche. So there's the molecule thing. Orange, the colors at the top are actually dealing with, from the Akashic record level, or if you're a spirit, I'm not sure about this, but let's assume you're looking at this dimension. I understand they can't see this dimension exactly the way we see it, but they can understand it. They may see colors, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can read if matter is made up of light, and light is a basic physical constituent that permeates other dimensions rather than not just our dimension, then we start to use categories of light as what we're made up of. That's almost theosophical. We're made up of vibrations and rays. And so the colors represent whole different worlds. So LaRouche is orange, partly because he's against the British, the Protestant, the Queen. The Irish call their Protestant selves orange men, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reference to the Protestant world that LaRouche is against, symbolized by, at least he's against the leaders of the Protestant world, and he considers the Protestant Reformation was a downfall. That's LaRouche speaking on behalf of the Vatican to the degree that LaRouche allows him to be aligned with the Vatican, right?
Mm-hmm.
He definitely promotes the Pope's encyclical. So he's orange, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of how they match up. Now take Eloy, which is McLuhan, backspin. As the Evergreens once said, McLuhan was the best at being a futurist because he used the past to predict the future. I'm thinking of backspin as the past, the obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
So you just work your way through. McLuhan, I mean, these five differences in any row across the chart represent qualitative differences or different ratios in a chain letter of phase shifts. So I'm using all the different scientific and artistic terms for differences in materials within the discipline and the phase shifts indicated by each one or the stages, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's repeating the point that the 1960 era, the LaRouche quadrant, is totally molded by the ground of that period, and then a different zone comes through with the McLuhan quadrant with the holopathic television satellite. That whole quadrant across all five columns in the McLuhan quadrant is the whole complex created by a ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
A series of figures. And then you shift into a totally different zone, which evokes a William Irwin Thompson and many other things, Lou Reed. That's the holopathic computer satellite, 67 to 72. That's a different zone, just like It's a white dwarf versus McLuhan's red giant versus LaRouche's black hole. Or Thompson represents cyanobacteria, as is different from the previous anaerobic bacteria and the cells before that, the prokaryotic. Croker represents the eukaryotic cells, and then Dobbs represents Acacia. Croker represents graviton, which is different from the Thompson phase, boson, McLuhan phase, gluon, and electromagnetism phase, LaRouche. So once you understand that this surfeit of phase shifts from different categories, once you understand the role they're showing, it makes the chart a lot simple. Not simpler, it's not as overwhelming as if you need to know each category. It's the fact that each category is moving on to another category. You could say it's evolutionary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have an evolutionary thing going on from 60 to 90. But it's not a simple linear progressive evolution, because the tetrad, retrievals and obsolescence and foot points, are within the evolution. All right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just take this one line, the Thompson, the Croker line here. Why is McLuhan crash TV?
Because he's taught. Okay, now, disciplinary TV is Thompson, Croker surveillance TV, excremental TV, Dobbs. Match them up to the periods, time-wise. Sacrificial TV is 1960, crash TV, 1965. Disciplinary TV, 1970. Surveillance TV, 1980. Excremental TV, 1990. Begin with the excremental. TV is pure garbage for most people by 1990, because they've run out of, well, dominating the culture. They're now a minority medium, desperate to get attention, and so they get more degraded turnover of sitcoms. They last 1 week or 5 weeks, and then they're on to something else. So it becomes a extreme version of garbage in, garbage out, or excremental, which is Croker's definition. If you actually read his definition in his book, Spasm, you'd see how he describes it fits the era of the 90s, where surveillance fits the 80s. That's the beginning of, if you remember, in factories, people having video cameras watching them at work, right, by 1980.
Mm.
Remember that? Remember when that started to come in?
Yeah, I remember working in an organization where there were these smoky plexiglass bubbles in the ceiling everywhere, and up inside the bubbles were these cameras that could be rotated on some kind of gear. So
yeah,
you never knew wherever you were in the building. If you were being watched or not.
Right, and that'd be at least by 1980. You probably experienced it in the 80s, right?
Yeah, in the 80s, yeah.
Now they have it in Manhattan and London, everywhere. So it just continued to expand. Now, disciplinary TV, we could call that the kind of Nixon era, 70s era, the bland era of TV, but kids who grew up in it didn't find it bland. But from those who are older generations, it started to emphasize cops, cop shows more, detective shows.
Mm.
The violence begins to come in, all right, on TV?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the disciplinary.
The Mod Squad.
Yeah. I mean, Mod Squad was probably one of the first ones taking the hippie media TV-generated stereotypes of youth culture and then showing a smarter squad of police-sided people, you know, imposing order on the irrelevant, irresponsible, ghettoized youth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's disciplinary TV. It's 1970. Crash TV is, now, Croker means crash in the levels of economic crash and identity crash, all the spectrum of disasters. Well, that begins in the 60s, because TV in the 60s moved out of the placid 50s, and you had the Watts riots and the JFK assassination and moon landings, or astronauts being burnt up as the rocket takes off. riots, assassinations, the Vietnam War, the turmoil that people think about the 60s, to say the turmoil of the 60s in the United States, was really the turmoil on the TV screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was lots of placidity, calm, celebratory, festival kind of life going on with the chemical body in the 60s, but the mood was dominated by the TV landscape, not yet the body. And the crash of so many sacred images caused by women's revolution or the sexual revolution or psychedelic music or black power, snipers like Charles Whitman from the Austin, Texas Tower in August 66. TV as a numbing, calm, hidden ground of the 50s becomes a figure, and its effects become the content of TV. Everything crashes. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense, right?
Sure.
And then sacrificial TV is partly resonating with the image of victims of McCarthyism were sacrificed for the hidden effect of television made Americans think that America was being run by communists because of the collective effect of the televised image. So there was a lot of sacrifice going on, including the sacrifice of life to the bland suburban uniformity of the 50s. Mm-hmm. Now these were not seen that way at the time too much. Maybe a few eccentric college students or intellectuals or beatniks saw it, but the mass movement of consciousness enjoyed itself just like it enjoyed itself in any other decade. But the thing is that in retrospect, the 50s were, because people were changed by the McLuhan Quadrant, not meaning McLuhan, but by television, and then the satellite effect of the 60s, it changed the image of the past, of the 50s. It said the 50s seemed like a icebox, a frozen, impersonal, formulaic zone under President Eisenhower, known as Ike, his regime, his televised image, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you look at that. So it's ways of taking the quadrants and showing different aspects from different disciplines, categories of qualitative differences in each quadrant caused by the media environments. But all this is replayed in the 90s as an afterimage when these moods caused by media don't affect people anymore. The 50s does not happen in the 90s. The 60s don't happen in the 90s. Neither do the 70s or 80s. What happens in the 90s is nothing other than popular acceptance of a friendly Android meme encouraging you to get more embedded and use it. And you have no problem with that, meaning society. It's a friendlier Android meme time, and so the actual changes that media brought in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, totally different zones and qualities and characteristics of changes, there is no change in the 90s. You could say the mood of no change or the fact of no change is a hidden effect of the Android meme. But it's a totally different effect than people and societies being changed by media and generally finding it uncomfortable. Now, a lot of people had a hard time in the 90s just because generally the older you were, you probably couldn't adapt to the apparent zombification of kids into cyberspace. But that's now 15 years ago.
Well, that was during the internet boom phase, which was pretty ecstatic and hysterical, culminating in what everybody expected to be the huge change, which was the Y2K, which turned out to be nothing.
Yeah, there was a big crash that everybody's waiting for. So you notice my zone is 1990, and the emotional quality, or whatever you want to call psychological quality, is what? It's ecstasy. So you just said that. And the dot-com boom of the 90s was an ecstasy of enjoying your cyber nature,
mm-hmm.
which was already being built as a hidden ground since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So the 90s has images of all the decades, all the phases, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, Quadrophenia on a decade kind of category. These moods were the surface images and replays in the chip landscape of the Android meme.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you move more into the 90s, more and more, as computers got better, more and more you could retrieve anything. So now you end up with YouTube, which is a new kind of Akashic record where you can alter not just what light energy records, like they say about the Akashic record, you can change what it says about yourself. You follow that?
Sure.
So the middle column, now you have, the middle column is the monad, different from the triad, different from the dyad, different from the tetrad, different from the pentad. So it's pretty formulaic, it's pretty methodical, pretty linear, pretty obvious, the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm using categories from as many parts of life and putting them in sequential phasal shift order on the surface, if it takes a while to notice these patterns, it looks like chaos, just put in nice, neat rows. But actually, it's a 10-year-old could understand this chart once they saw how I'm organizing it.
Yeah. Well, the cultural references all fit, you know. I mean,
yeah. Fit the eras. Now, here's the point. The phase shift, when you get into the Android memes after image in the 90s, there is no more phase shifts. And that's why, and another reason why we have the subatomic particles, which don't even exist. They're questionable whether they even happen. And so demon nuclei, which is for the quadrant from 60 to 90, which is the whole chart, or the whole, yeah, phases of the chart, and this chart is the after image of the 60 to 90, so it's the after image of the demon nuclei. Holopathic media, holopathic cliche probes aren't even a threat anymore, at least for the advanced industrial societies or the advanced virtual societies.
Well, is after image to imply that it's a visual?
No. After image just is, it ain't there anymore. I could say an after.
Well, it's there as a ghost. I mean, when I think of an after image, I think of somebody just took my picture with a flash and I close my eyes and I still see the flash.
Yeah, you get an after image as an effect of the changes on your senses by some sensory input. Mm-hmm. An echo is another. We just call it an echo.
Oh, reverberations.
Yeah. Not reverberations when the environment is real. The environment is not there in the 90s. So it's ephemeral. Really doesn't. So on the broadest level, this chart represents a period which has no content.
The afterglow.
And it's what the 90s, the afterglow. The 90s presented access to all this information in what Coker called a post-information society, where actually none of this data, Coker writing a book called Data Trash, none of this data has any constituent force. All this media brings in this stuff, and people become more restless and want more and faster and quicker experience of these media. So it becomes more and more fleeting. We become a life of virtual particles like the categories in the subatomic references. So you have this surfeit of amazing references to all kinds of content, but it's pointing out that it's just software prefiguring of a real revolution, cold fusion, which has nothing to do with messages.
Does every later stage subsume all previous stages?
Yeah. Yeah, you could say definitely the simple McLuhan principle that the previous is an art form. And then it becomes an art form when it's subsumed by the next phase. But the thing is, this chart is showing them all happening at the same time.
So in this chart, do we have any cliche probe can move from cliche to archetype status and back to cliche status.
Yeah, that's what's going on here. That's why, you know, you have, remember, under, in the Rumpelstiltskin corner down the right-hand bottom side, the ratio is the formula chart to the tiny node chart. Then normally you would think that the formula chart is the ground chart where everything came out of, because I did take the tiny node chart out of the Bob Dobbs formula chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I purposely make the formula chart the figure to indicate that the formula chart refers to the development before the Android meme, coming from humans, extension humans. But the tiny node chart is about the phase after that, when the Android meme is extending itself. So the Android meme is the ground, and it's pretending humans are the figures, that you are in control. You made the computer program. You created the new software.
You mean stuff. Each individual as opposed to some genius like an Einstein who did it for everybody. You're saying everybody's doing it for themselves.
Yeah, that's a half-truth what you're saying. And it also means that even the Einsteins, which are still there, the Bill Gates or whoever you want to give credit for making new computers, new kinds of technology, the guys who invented YouTube, they are the figure for an evolution that's going on. Not just you, both of you, you and the genius.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The sub-genius and the genius. So the point is that the ratio of the formula chart as figure to the tiny node chart, the relationships of the two charts is what's going on, the flipping back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so then this relates to cliche archetype. So you have the formula chart is archetypes. You don't have the word cliche in the title, right? It's how the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho. But you have the word cliche in the tiny note chart. So I have holeopathic backspins retrievals, that's half the tetrad. And then you have holeopathic cliche probes and flippings, the other part of the tetrad. Probes being the extensions or front spins. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the tetrad right there in the relationship of the two charts, and there's the relationship of cliche and archetype, and they flip back and forth into each other, which is just, see, as you speed up an environment, take that four-stage process, and what's called the last word is the latest technology, the latest invention. It's the last word. And then a new last word comes along and obsolesces the first last word I'm talking about. Turns the last word into a cliche, then it becomes an art form, then an archetype. As that process speeds up and you actually get beyond that sequential phase after 1960, then the Android meme is doing it more rapidly and not in order. So it's offering an archetype as the last word, and then it becomes an art form. Or it offers the art form as a cliche, and then it becomes an archetype.
Is that where it starts going anamorphic?
Yes, exactly. It gets past the symmetry of the Thompson quadrant, which is fractal. The micro mirrors the macro, as above, so below, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's still within a visual space framework, a symmetry. But when you get into non-visual tactile chaos, seeming chaos, it's the anamorphic. So yes, this chart is anamorphic, but it's meant to be the opposite of it. It's to give you a sense of order, especially to visually biased people. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, when I think of anamorphic, I think of like those distorting mirrors in the circus. You know, you look at yourself.
Yep.
They're not very pleasant.
Well, when you flip the archetypes and cliches back and forth, then they begin to get confused, and you know, you get into Terrence McKenna's boundaryless situation, I mean, that was funny. That was what was silly about Terrence advocating us dissolving our boundaries, when actually people need to find ways to rebuild their boundaries, at least temporarily, which is what this chart offers, because they were going psychotic in the boundaryless fact that they lived in, the Android meme.
Right.
Even the Android meme gets to the phase of propping up boundaries. That's what the PC computer in the present, what do we call the present user-generated, MySpace-generated YouTube situation. It's allowing people to be... to think they have their own autonomy, and they've created boundaries.
Right.
But they're manic. They want to diminish their boundaries by claiming they've got 1,000 friends, you know, in MySpace. The idea is to get as many friends as possible, apparently. They want to create a crowd and feel less isolated.
I think Terrence was rebelling against these sort of ossified, patriarchal... brute mentality, which led to,
which didn't exist anymore. Maybe in small towns or people acted out that as nostalgic figures, but in corporate life wasn't like that. He was reacting. He was the sex quadrant reacting against the God quadrant. Anyways, and promoting the Gaia quadrant and a bit of the Croker quadrant, because he said the soul would become hardwired. He was either, I don't know if he's pro that, but he was talked about it. He was concerned about it.
Yeah.
Interested him. He actually expressed quadrophenia. He hopped up and down all the quadrants. But his main concerns in light of the comprehensive situation we're in, he looked rather specialized and having exhibiting tunnel vision. But, you know, I claim that I was the only one who had the comprehensive vision. Most people aren't operating on the level I am. And they do quite well picking a quadrant and running with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the Android meme welcomes, to the degree you're concerned about the Android meme seducing you.
Yeah. Well, if Terrence was concerned that we were destroying ourselves because of our heritage of patriarchal...
that's left hemisphere visual space.
Yeah, mentality. Well, maybe he was wrong about that, but we're still destroying ourselves.
How do you know? We have we destroyed ourselves yet?
People seem to be concerned that that's what's happening.
That's right. Because McLuhan had the principle, and it's always useful to quote McLuhan because he had a lot of answers to 19th and 20th century academic issues. He said, as the crowd gets bigger, it feels it's getting smaller. So it's like the MySpace person. They're super inflated. They're Prometheus. They're huge because they have all these major media landscapes at their fingertips. So it's ballooning them up.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they feel they're getting smaller, so they require crowd. They want to make the crowd bigger, so the idea is to get as many virtual name tags attached to your space. There's the whole syndrome, the crowd getting... as it actually gets bigger, in a sense, the individual as crowd, as controller of crowd, that brings in the Wyndham Lewis themes, as they feel they're getting bigger, paradoxically, they begin to feel insecure. And to maintain their bigger sensibility that the Android meme gave them, they've got to acquire statistical quantities of names or friends.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that we are disappearing, and more bad news as we get more security and hygienic environments wrapped around us. This is what Baudrillard went into. As we got more and more sterile or protected in so many different ways in social life and in work life, just seatbelts as an example, 40 years ago, as we got more immune deficiency protected, we actually flipped and became more vulnerable. So he felt that AIDS and diseases like that attacking the immune system were complementary effects of over-security. We'd lost the healthy balance being able to take attacks on the immune system like people did 100 years ago and have tougher bodies, tougher chemistry that could respond to the germs and that, to today, you got people have colds for 6 months.
Yeah, in general, people are living longer, but then there are, in general, all kinds of health problems that we didn't used to have, too, also like obesity.
Right, so you were saying you can focus on what looks more apocalyptic or Armageddon or disastrous or cancerous. There's lots of statistics to support that point of view, but if you remain stuck in that point of view, you miss the ramifications of way more devastating situations, like actual the ghettoization of the chemical body that you're trying to protect as an immune syndrome. It's being ghettoized inside the TV and chip body. So we disappeared, and it's way beyond, as I said before, the most disastrous scenarios of human being. Of human being, of being human, they've all been trumped by what we live in today. That's why Croker can feature an essay called Post-God, the Post-God Syndrome.
Well, it now, seems to me the thing that's going to trump everything, even getting wiped out by a disappeared android meme, is...
That's a good one. We're going to be wiped out by the disappeared android meme. You're talking Bob knowledge there. That's good.
But what I think will even trump that is the struggles over energy. If we don't break through to cold fusion or something like it, the struggles over diminishing energy reserves in a global humanity that's trying to expand its mobility. It seems like that's going to lead up to a point of friction, which is going to blow. I mean, if we don't get past the danger point, the friction's going to get too hot. We're just going to wipe out half the planet or something.
Right, but the other half will be lived. The thing is that what is wipeout? If you've got still 20 million people on the planet, it hasn't been completely wiped out. There have been disasters before.
Yeah, but I mean, 20 million people who don't know how to... who live in a world for which there's no, they can't hunt for their hunt and gather food. They're going to be living like what was that movie that Mel Gibson was in, The Road Warriors?
Yeah.
20 million road warriors. What kind of life is that?
Well, there's been all kinds of lives through history. It ain't going to be the life we got today, but humans will adapt. I don't think we should be focused on.
Well, in those circumstances, it's the brutal humans that adapt.
Right, and that'll happen again. So the point is, humans won't wipe themselves out. Now we get into Star Wars scenarios. Did you see that YouTube of that little girl? She's 3 years old. Carolyn told me it. Little girl is describing what Star Wars, the movie, was about.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about the princess, her home planet got blown up, and then it shows the planet totally laser beamed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we may get to that point where planets are, excuse me, regularly blown up, but by that time we'll be on other planets and mobile in space. I don't think that's going to blow up. That's not going to happen to this planet unless we had a comet smash into us. But according to everyone, there ain't one coming for another 1,000 years or something. So we're okay for a while. By that time, we'll be off planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess what we're emphasizing here is take the images that you have of what you think is going on, whether you think it's utopic or dystopic, and see how your images are weak and how you could have better images of what's going on and actually have a stronger perception of what is rather than being subjected to immature images of what is.
Mm-hmm.
The new form of meditation.
Yeah.
New form of visualization.
Well, that's where it's profitable to talk to Bob, because
you have other
images, and you seem to walk the talk because you keep your own energy.
Resonating, as we see in Nancy Parker's recent video.
Yeah.
Which will be available soon in Walmart.
Right.
The visual, this chart is the, you know, the tiny holopathic visualization of the content of the four bodies and the coming discoveries and surprises of the mystery body. So my knowledge has helped people make millions already.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's proprietary. People keep that to themselves.
Right.
Right. So I think that's it. We've done over 45, 50 minutes, right?
Yeah.
What's it actually, does it say?
We're at 55 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay, well, we made some progress on the chart. There's lots more to say about it.
Chipping away at it.
Yeah.
Keep, you know, there's an image I remember. Somebody said that when you, the ice skater, the tighter they pull their arms in, the faster they spin.
Right.
And I saw this YouTube today of, sent you, you haven't seen it yet, but Lynch is talking about where he gets ideas from, David Lynch. He says it's a matter of focusing your attention, you know, tighter and to a tighter and tighter. He didn't, this is how I heard it. I don't know exactly what he meant, but focusing your attention to sort of a more and more, like focusing the sun through the lens of a magnifying glass to a, you know, a brighter and brighter point.
That's the cone on my chart under Bob, the cone effect.
Yeah.
Cone slash Taurus. Yeah, so he's recommending this, and I saw him speak at a Barnes & Noble a year ago, and he has an Akashic Record approach. He says that if I focus, then the ideas will come to me.
Yeah.
Magnetize them.
Yeah, and as you tighten your focus, you can deepen your perspective, and from a deeper perspective, you can encounter larger or more potent ideas.
Great, and let's adapt that to the chart.
Right. If someone studies this chart and they can bring all these elements into focus together, you know, in a tighter and tighter, smaller, more holopathic perspective, then you're looking at a complex of integrated energies at in a more subtle and focused level within resonating within yourself or within.
Right. This is a mandala.
Yeah.
Or a mandala. So you used to look under Rai E. Every one of those terms fits into Lynch's themes. If you talk about how he attracts ideas by focusing, that's electromagnetism. Mm. He often has elementals and those energies in his themes, like the Bob in Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
It always involves a sacrifice of somebody, a murder, like Laura in Twin Peaks. It becomes a black hole. And he plays with music, the bass, and the circle, and the front spin. You could adapt those themes to the major motifs of Lynch's movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with Rai, the original separateness. And usually focuses on some, malicious character.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it, man.
Okay. Signing off for today. Good session.
Okay, thank you.